Welcome to Peers Like Me, a podcast hosted by Western New York Independent Living. Peers Like Me podcast is a regularly broadcasted podcast which educates, empowers, and enlightens our community's understanding of those who have behavioral health barriers and how the utilization of various skills, techniques, services, and supports results in those impacted living fulfilling community membership and participation. Peers Like Me podcast is based in the belief that those who live with disabilities have the right to choose, advocate, and understand everything about living their own life. Today, our guest is Dale Welsh from Hackensack, New Jersey, who has lived the past 43 years with a serious mental illness. He is a magna cum laude from Fairleigh Dickinson University and is the author of over 5,000 poems and 6 novels, 5 of which are in collections available on Amazon Prime. He was a private college tutor and a financial educator employed by Transamerica Insurance. Dale struggled terribly with mental illness and talks about his experience of not recognizing that something wasn't quite right about him. A very sophisticated medical term used to describe this is agnosgosia. Our host is Maura Kelly, the voice of the individuals WNYIL serves.
Welcome. My name is Maura Kelly from Peers Like Me in Western New York Independent Living. Today, our guest is Dale Welsh from Hackensack, New Jersey. He was diagnosed with a serious mental illness in 1975. Since then, he's lived 43 years on his own, and he graduated magna cum laude from Fairfield Dickinson University. He's also the author and created over 5,000 poems, including 5 collections on Amazon, and has 6 novels. Dale provides college tutoring for many years and is a financial educator working for Transamerica Insurance, which is a $10 billion company. Welcome, Dale. How you doing?
Thank you very much, Maura. How are you?
Good. Yes. So, Dale, you've been around for a while.
I have been.
Yes. So you were diagnosed. What was your life before that? What happened? How did they figure out, or how did you figure out that you had a serious mental illness?
Well, actually, it was sort of like imposed upon me more. As you mentioned, I'm a poet, and so I have what I call one of my introductory poems. If you want me to run through that, because it basically sums up what happened to me. And 18 lines.
Okay.
So would you?
Sure, Dale. What's the title of the poem? What's the title?
It's called Dale Reviewing What Actually Happened, and it goes like this. Hi, I'm God was the joke I made after killer dormant toke of some primo Ivy League smoke, which apparently caused me to croak because in special hospital I awoke. With roommate Gabriel, the main bloke, who did my delusion angelically stroke. Even while doctor claimed my brain broke the moment divine gag I spoke. Testifying I was only big quack, which clinicians diagnosed as psychotic attack. Preventing me from getting sanity back. Until I came to Teaneck Hackensack to pursue resident therapy program track. And deal with my evident lack of reason among psychiatric patient pack who never gave me any slack. Under interrogation, the story didn't crack.
Okay, wow, that's very powerful, Dale. It's very spooky, too, for me, like just hearing this stuff, and it sounds excruciating. So,
So basically what happened was at Dartmouth College in 1975, I figured out I was God. And so I was walking around, and I thought it was a big joke. I thought it was like the funniest joke I'd ever come up with.
So you actually thought you were a God?
Well, I thought it was a joke. I really meant it as a joke, to tell you the truth.
So you didn't think you're God. You just said that.
There was an element of belief, but there was also an element of like, this is like just the funniest thing I could come up with. So
why would you come up with something funny like that?
The punchline was, how could God be 5'8"?
And you're 5'8"?
Correct.
Okay, all right.
So, it's just like the pure, like, you know, craziness of thinking I was God, and it was like, so basically, the punchline was, how could God be 5'8"?
Right.
Anyway, I was walking around Dartmouth campus telling everybody what I thought was my hysterical joke, and then seeing how long it was before I burst into hysterical laughter. And so after about 2 days, the campus cops came to me and said, "Are you Dale?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Would you come with us?" And I said, "Sure." I figured they were going to take me to meet the president of the university.
Oh, okay.
But instead, they took me to the infirmary, where I was interrogated by 3 sets of Ivy League psychiatrists over the next 4 hours. They put me in a room, shot me full of drugs, and next thing, and 3 days later, I was in a mental hospital in New York City with a roommate named Gabriel. And this began my whole psychiatric journey. I was in that hospital for 13 weeks, and then I came to a private psychiatric residential program in Hackensack under the direction of this one doctor. And I was there for 5.5 years.
Okay, slow down, Dale. Dale, I have lots of questions. All right, so can we just go slower a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, so I am a person with a serious mental illness as well, and I've had many of the same experiences and perspectives. And today, after decades of having, you know, living with a mental illness, I ask myself, but what could have been done? What options were in the 80s and the 70s? Could people do? You know, we've progressed historically dealing with people, but what could have happened, and what's different today? Do you ever think about that, Dale?
I do actually, and you know, I feel that, you know, everything that was done to me, you know, from the hospitalization to the program. In the program, I was hospitalized 9 times. I've actually been hospitalized a total of 15 times. So, but I haven't had a psychotic episode since 1993.
Okay, Dale, let me ask you a question. When you were hospitalized, what would have happened if you weren't hospitalized, do you think? Would you be alive today? Would our community still be safe? What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I was never violent, Mark.
No, but, like, what about you? Like, could you care for yourself? Were you able to, you know, like, why would they put you in a hot, like, was it needed, I guess, in your opinion?
Then that's like an interesting question.
Right.
Like I said, I was in a psychiatric program, so, you know, I was very highly monitored and everything. And I think that a lot of times I was hospitalized just because I was causing so much distress to everybody else through my natural and, you know, whatever you want to call it, enthusiasm or whatever.
Okay.
And you asked me if I was, how, like, agonizing it was. And actually, my doctor called my illness psychotic bliss.
All right. Okay, so, Dale, so I have a question. So what you went through is terrible, and I have similar experiences. So now people listening today in 2024 have loved ones or experienced serious mental illness themselves. What do you think should happen if you fast forward to today? If you had the same issues or thought about the way you thought jokingly about God today, what do you think should happen, or what do you think we as a community should do, like right now today, fast forward?
That's very interesting question. So I have thought about this a lot, and you know, basically, I felt that, you know, sometimes I felt that basically I was being repressed, and, you know, I was just like too like extreme radical for reality. And, you know, that's what I feel happened in 1975. But today, I think there are, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, I'm very grateful for the help that I got in my life.
Okay, good. Yeah.
You know, I'm extremely helpful and, you know, grateful. And ultimately, you know, I feel that this was a path that was basically predestined, and I've gone through everything I had to go through in order to get to the point where I am now.
Okay, so...
It was very difficult at times, but ultimately, you know, I also realized, you know, how crazy I really was.
Right.
How psychotic I was when I got taken away from Dartmouth, and I'm sure you know about agnosognosia.
No, what is that? What is that, Del?
Oh, okay. Well, agnosognosia is a term taken from neurology, and there's a book called "I'm Not Sick and I Don't Need Help" by this guy Xavier Amador. He's a doc. He's a psychological doctor So agnosognosia is a term taken from neurology for stroke victims who can't realize there's something wrong with them.
Oh, okay. All right. That's something I should know about. Yeah.
It's a major concept. And
can you say the word again, Dale? What's the word again?
Agnosognosia. Agnosognosia.
So that's when it's apparent that you have problems or issues, but you're not aware of it.
You are like totally oblivious that there's something wrong.
Okay, so yeah, that I get that. Yeah, I didn't know what the name was.
So Dr. Amador in his book, "I'm Not Sick and I Don't Need Help," talks about agnosognosia, and it's been proven now that it is a symptom of serious mental illness, and that as many as 50 to 60% of people with serious mental illness don't, you know, have agnosognosia.
Right.
Obviously this presents a great problem, because if you don't think you're mentally ill, then you aren't going to take your medication.
Right.
And you aren't going to agree to see doctors and everything. And, so basically, I feel very fortunate that basically I was forced into treatment even though I was in agnosognosia.
All right, so Del, there's people, and I run into people all the time, and they think, oh my gosh, my son needs help. You know, they're going to have to force him, or I'm going to have to put him into the emergency room. What do we do with friends and loved ones we have that... obviously, there's something wrong, obviously, and they might not be able to take care of themselves. How would you help someone that doesn't know that they need help or want help, or in our opinions? What do you think? Is force the only way?
Well, that's something that Dr. Amador goes into, is how to communicate with someone with agnosognosia. I would highly recommend that book. It's called "I'm Not Sick and I Don't Need Help" by Xavier Amador. Amador.
Hey, Dale. So I've talked to some other people that have been forced. Assisted with treatment when they didn't want treatment, and they feel ashamed, or like they don't want to tell anyone, but they're really glad it happened. Have you seen that? Have you experienced that with yourself and other people that had this?
I have a program to help the family caregivers of those with mental illness, and that's something that I address, is not only the societal stigma, but also the self stigma that people with serious mental illness go through. And I think, you know, there is a big element to that. You know, even if you don't think you're
right,
the fact that you're treated like you're sick,
right,
can have like a very negative effect on your self-image and everything.
Right. So I know I've been a strong advocate in New York State against forced treatment. And that's my will, like, that's what I think. And recently, in the last couple of years, I have friends that have had forced treatment, and they think, and they say it's the best thing that ever happened to them. And so it questions, like, my idea of force is just my idea, and I'm, like, setting up choices or not giving people choices that might help them. Like, so I think I create the stigma, part of the stigma, of people ashamed that they were forced into treatment when they don't even know they had an illness.
Right.
So,
well, you know, sometimes there are two elements to it.
Yeah.
First off, if your family or your loved ones or something, like, force you into a hospital, then, you know, even though you might, because of your illness, you might think it's like a conspiracy or something.
Right, right.
You know, it's something that I always bore in mind, and this is why I never held any grudges against my parents, is because they really felt that, you know, they were doing what needed to be done, and I was unable to, I was not competent to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
And you didn't know you were struggling. You didn't know you had a disability.
Well, I mean, it took me 10 years and like a vision of a vision to understand just how sick it was to think I was God.
All right, so Del, while you're talking, I'm thinking I was diagnosed with breast cancer several years ago. I got my routine mammogram or whatever. I didn't know I had breast cancer until they said, hey, you have breast cancer, but I didn't refuse treatment, you know? So I'm comparing, you know, cancer to mental illness, and the difference of, like, the illness saying, no, I don't have this, where cancer, I didn't feel it, but the doctor said I had it, and I agreed with them. Does that make sense? Like,
It does, and you know, It's a very tricky slope. Because
right.
Ultimately, you know, mental illness, I mean, a physical illness like cancer, that can be, there's physical evidence. You know, mm-hmm. you have a bump, you have a growth or something.
Right.
But with mental illness, it's like much more, like, you know, sort of like ambivalent, because ultimately, you know, you can say, you know, you can say everybody's, I'm not crazy, everybody else is a crazy.
Right, right.
And that's very easy to do. But, and, you know, I understand that there are, you know, times when there's a misdiagnosis or there's something going on that people are unjustly, you know, hospitalized
right.
or treated and everything. But ultimately, I just feel that sometimes you have to make a command decision. You know, you have to say, you know, my loved one is, you know, is off the wall, and, you know, there's nothing I can do, and I have to give him or her to someone who has more knowledge about these things.
Right. And it's terrible. It's a very, there's not many options. It's not, there's no good alternative, it seems like. It's a very sad, powerless feeling, I believe. So,
And, you know, I mean, the thing, the bottom line is a person has to be self-aware enough to be able to see that they need help. And that sometimes takes a very long time.
Or that, I mean, yeah.
Basically, it took me, you know, like, 10 hospitalizations before I realized. I'm hospitalized in the program 9 times, and the mm-hmm. last 6 times I went to the hospital, I admitted myself because I knew I was psychotic, and that's a level of self-awareness
yeah.
a lot of people have never realized.
That's really good. That's, yeah, I was reading about that yesterday. So people who have psychotic symptoms are often more hospitalized, But that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It means it's a good thing. They're getting care, you know, so that's great. So, yeah.
Correct.
So,
it took me a long time before I had that level of self-awareness
yeah.
to be able to say, you know, well, I am psychotic and I need the hospital. I mean, obviously, this is a very controversial subject.
Right.
Like forced hospitalization and
right.
everything, but... You know, I think also, you know, even medication, you know, a lot of people fight against, you know, like medication
right.
someone will. But if you're psychotic, you don't have the judgment to be
right.
able to tell what's best for you.
Right.
And, you know, that's a sad fact, but it's reality.
So, and then we have advanced directives, psychiatric advanced directives. Do you have one of those? Like, so... in case you get out of touch or with reality, you have pre-plans for a loved one to say for
no,
you.
I don't have that.
All right, okay. But there are things such as advanced directives for people that have some awareness that, you know, they may not be doing well and need instructions. So.
Well, I think one of the reasons why I would admit myself to the hospital is because I had a very good working relationship with my doctor. And, you know, when I was, like, on the, you know, starting psychosis, I would, like, give him a call and tell him something. And he'd say, you know, you aren't well or, you know, that's crazy thinking or whatever. So, you know, I had that, like, that feedback system that was very valuable, but
right.
ultimately I made the decision that I was psychotic.
And, right.
You know, it takes a long time before you reach that type
yeah.
of self-awareness.
So, Dale, you mentioned medication. So that's another big discussion. So.
I've been out of the hospital 31 years, Maura.
Oh, so, that's good. Yeah.
You know, so... Basically, I feel that, you know, I don't find my medication because,
right.
you know, it was sort of like drummed into me that, you know, I have a chemical imbalance in my brain.
Right.
You know, and even though this is coming into controversy these days, but I have a chemical imbalance in my brain.
Okay, and you didn't choose this, you know, you didn't do something to create this, you didn't decide one day... to be mentally ill, right? Like, just like people are born...
That's another...
another...
...more, like, dicey part of
okay.
my story is because I did a lot of drugs when I was in...
Oh, okay, all right. So, but we're talking about medication. So you've been out of the hospital for 33 years, you said?
31.
So that's a dicey situation. So where would you be without medication?
I would probably either be dead or locked up in the back ward.
Right.
I mean, that's what I feel.
Right. So we were all locked up in back wards without the medication in the 40, you know, before the late 1960s and 70s. So I think we've come a long way. You know, we're not there 100%, but we're moving in the right direction, I think, towards treatment of mental
right.
health. So, Dale, what are you doing today? Like, give people some hope. What can you share?
As you mentioned, I had like a career as a financial professional and educator with this company called World Financial Group, which is a subsidiary of Transamerica Insurance. I'm a poet. I've been writing a poem a day since January 1st, 2023. I have an archive of 5,000 poems.
Wow.
But I've been writing a poem a day since 1/1/23. So that's part of it. And, I just do my routine. I take,
cool.
you know, first thing I do in the morning is take my medication. I have a very peaceful, serene, and I feel productive life. And, you know, I'm trying to get my mentoring business going where I, like, can help family caregivers of those with to get the premium to deal with your daily caregiving challenges. And so I'm networking. I'm working on a new poetry collection. And, you know, basically, 24 hours a day is just like enough time for me to be at peace, but it's also time for me to get everything done that I need to get done.
All right. Well, thank you, Del. So this is at least one part of at least a two-part podcast. I really want to thank you for sharing today. And part two will come later to discuss the tools you use to maintain your recovery. It's been so nice to talk to you. And any parting words, Del?
First off, I'd like to thank you very much for having me on as a guest, Morris. It's been a great honor, and I love talking to people, and but ultimately, I just want to say, there is hope.
Good.
Active sedation is a big problem, especially when you first get ill.
Right.
And, I just like to help people, make people aware, like caregivers and stuff, about the problem of agnosognosia, because I think it stands in the way of, like, a lot of people getting better.
Right.
And I just want to say that, there's always hope. I use myself as an example of how far, after 15 hospitalizations, I very well could have been just, like, put away forever.
Okay, thank you.
I feel very fortunate, one of my big points of pride is I was hospitalized 15 times.
Right.
And I was discharged 15 times.
Right. Del, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Peers Like Me. This is a broadcast of the West New York Independent Living.
You've been listening to Peers Like Me, a podcast that explores issues related to behavioral health. Sponsored by Western New York Independent Living, Inc., with the assistance of the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Today, our guest has been Dale Welsh from Hackensack, New Jersey. Our host has been Maura Kelly.